What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of the Sheehan Show here on Sherdog.com. My name is Sean Sheehan, and today I am looking back at the first PFL card of the 2024 season. It went down this Thursday evening or night for me in San Antonio in Texas, and it was a pretty good card. I would say it was one of those cards that was... there wasn't much out of the ordinary. You know, there wasn't any big controversies, no contests or eye pokes or grind shots or split decisions much or anything like that anyway. So pretty straightforward night, but some fun fights, some enjoyable fights, and I think a good way to kick off the season. One thing I really noticed as well, that I felt like there was, there's a clear difference between the PFL fights and other fights. Look, the elbows can be an issue. They're a big issue in one fight especially. But I actually think the season format, the tournament format, knowing you're going to be fighting definitely in 8 weeks again and then in a few weeks after that again in the finale, is in the playoffs first, obviously, then in the finale, is you have to take that into account. You have to think about that. You have to think also about getting into those playoffs and into the championship fight by, you know, getting the finish or whatever it might be. And I suppose they kind of line up together. If you get the early finish, you don't take much damage. It's it works well together. But it changes the dynamic of some of these fights. I was actually thinking about it as well. I'm looking forward to seeing the second round of fights because I think it'll probably be more evident there, especially for, say, someone like... we won't give the name now. We won't get the spoilers if I'm breaking down these fights to you for the first time and you haven't heard them. So let's say someone who won their fight by decision... and maybe others got a first round knockout. Well, when they go into the next lineup of fights, they might need that finish because if they win again, their opponents could, you know, get 1 point or get, you know, whatever way it might work out, win a close split decision and they're in even though they won two dominant fights, you know? So, one of their opponents in the bracket. So I think it's all very, very interesting. We did see some of that, especially in the main event. Let's start with the main event because, before I get to the main event, there's one or two things I want to mention first. So obviously the new season, what has changed? What's new in the broadcast and everything like that? Now, we'll talk about the commentary in a second. But other than that, not really too much. I love the fact that they have done less of like the during the fight interviews. They had Impa Kasang and I on tonight in the middle of the Liz Carmouche fight. That was enough for me. That was too much for me even. I think it's just a little bit disrespectful for the fighters in there to be interviewing someone else during their fight. But they didn't do too much of it, and I think that's good. There wasn't so much of the AI scoring, and there was little bits and pieces. There wasn't so much of what's that thing called? those lads that try to convince everyone that they know everything about scoring and got a lot of random people around the globe to sign up. What's the name of that? Not glory scoring. I can't remember. Verdict MMA, that thing. There wasn't so much of that. So that's good. It's improved. There was like the sound early, I think what that might have been in the zone thing where I was watching it here, was a bit iffy, but that was quickly fixed. Now, that happens on a lot of broadcasts, so not much criticism there at all. And I feel like, I remember, was it last year or the year before, it started off and it was pretty bad. Like, there was camera errors and sound errors and lots of different things. Now, actually, in the main event, there was like an overlay popped up for a second. I don't know what happened there. But other than that, it was pretty good. And I think they've cleaned that up an awful lot for this season. Now, the commentary. I wasn't sure who it was on the commentary at the start because I kind of came in. I literally turned on my TV, my DAZN or whatever it was, literally as the first fight was starting, so I didn't get to see the introductions or anything. But it was Tyron Woodley, Randy Couture, and Sean O'Connell. And, you know, we obviously talked about Randy and Sean before, but I thought Tyron Woodley was really good. Like, really, really, really good. He broke down the fights well. He had a bit of fun with it. He was well spoken. Like, 10 out of 10 for me from Tyron Woodley. I thought he was really, really, really good. And I'm very, everyone knows, I'm very critical of the old commentators and commentary team. But No, couldn't be at all critical of him. You know, we know what Randy is. Randy's Randy, and I think he had a very good rapport with Kenny. And now that that's gone, it's going to take him time to change that, I suppose. And, you know, Sean O'Connell is Sean O'Connell too. I think those two lads especially need to maybe brush up a bit on their Bellator knowledge, but that'll come as well, you know, 100%. I'd love to see him have someone from Bellator, maybe it's, whether it's a Josh Thompson or whoever it might be, maybe like in the background or whatever, even just like giving him these little bits of knowledge. Or, you know, John McCarthy came in at one stage talking about Vassell's wrestling. That's the sort of thing you need, I think, that unless you've been paying a lot of attention, like, you know, obviously I've been paying attention to these because I have been covering them for the last few years here for Sherdog, but I think that's the sort of thing that kind of takes you to the next level. But that's very much nitpicking. I thought they were very, very, very good. I know Kenny Florian has announced that he stepped away, and I think that was kind of his own decision, he said on the Anakin Florian podcast. But that's a real pity. I think I would have really liked him, Sean O'Connell and Tyron Woodley. I think they would have been very good, to be honest. And you know, Randy can do plenty, I know, but you know, Randy in commentary, it always, people like it because he's a legend of the game and everything. But yeah, I would like to see him. I think they have some good options now as well. So maybe Kenny back someday would be good. But yeah, I was very impressed with it, and I thought it was very, very good. And shout out to Tyron Woody. I hope he's there. I hope this isn't just a tryout or whatever. I hope he's there for the season now, because you know, it does take a lot for me to like be okay with a commentator, and he was very good. So let's get to recap. Let's start with the main event. And the main event was a quick one and an interesting one. So quick, in fact, that I don't think it's even updated yet. Hold on, let me refresh. Oh, now it's updated. I was going to look for the time. So 2 minutes, 17 seconds. I'm recording this directly after the fights. There were the interview hadn't even happened when I was powering up my computer. That's how quick I know. So 2 minutes, 17 seconds into round one, the win for Valentin Moldavsky, which, if you listened to the preview show last week, if you didn't listen to the betting show, I gave you Valentin Moldavsky, so credit to me. It's the first one I've gotten in a long time. But he doesn't get many finishes. This is his first ever first round knockout. He has, I believe, a first round submission before. First ever first round knockout. And only his second ever knockout. So I think that's a clear indication that he has changed to fight in this format. And he did fight that way. I think there's no doubt about it. Now, two things actually happened. The fight started off, and I was very surprised with how much faster Ante Delia was than Valentin Moldavsky. Really surprised. He was landing combos, you know, very quick combos. He landed like a left hook around the guard. I was like, oh, geez. I knew how good Delia was on the feet, but we, as I said on the previous show, we know that from a good while back, but there's been a lot of wrestling, a lot of grappling from D'Elia, whether it's defensively or offensively over the last while. And I was like, how well will he strike and stand up? But early looked very, very good. There was a groin strike then, and I think that gave time for Moldavsky to kind of like, even though we were only, what, 35, 40 seconds into the fight or whatever, gave him time to come on and be like, I can't stand in ceremony here and let this guy be this much faster than me in the heavyweight division, because, you know, he's got good striking. He's like, he's going to knock me out. And that, you know, it could have been the other way around, or for most heavyweights. It's a vicious division. And if you let someone be the faster man, land those shots, you're going to get knocked out. And credit to Moldavsky, he immediately changed that up and took his game to the next level. He came out attacking, put D'Elia on his back foot, and you could hear Sean O'Connell on the commentary talking about, like, how often do you see Ante D'Elia on his back foot? And the answer is, look, not very often. Ante D'Elia was circling around and defending, but he quickly got injured to the body. I'm not 100% sure what happened there. I think there was a little bit of a knee, but there was a few punches as well from Moldavsky to the body, and he went back and he kept attacking it. Those right hands to the body hurt Ante D'Elia badly, but it was the right hand over the top that was the beginning of the end. Absolutely smashed into D'Elia. You see when the hands go up and the knees kind of buckle. Then he started throwing the knees again, did Moldavsky. Then, you know, probably five or six or seven or eight maybe punches later, and maybe three or four of them landed, and it was rightly called over. And a wonderful performance from Moldavsky after a start, you know, that could have led to a bad night for him, and credit to him for changing things up. It's funny how quickly things change in mixed martial arts. Like that grind strike, I firmly believe that gave him a chance to think and adjust. Now, if it didn't happen, would he have taught and adjusted on the fly? Very much maybe. Very much so. Something else might have happened. There might have been, you know, a bit of a slip or a bit of a knockdown or a bit of a, you know, even a bit of separation. It could have started happening like that anyway. But however, a very good win. I do think there must have been something with Dalia, though. There was definitely something happened to the body, whether it was something he brought in or something he just kind of got clipped with. I'm not too sure, but a wonderful finish anyway from Moldavski. The 6 points, and he goes on to compete in 8 weeks' time, and we'll see if he can get into the playoffs. Right, the next fight was also in the heavyweight division. It was Denis Golsov against Lyndon Vassell, and this one was a much more drawn-out, long, languid type affair into the 3 minutes, 11 seconds of round 3 with Denis Golsov getting the win, but it very much didn't start that way. Vassell in the first round immediately got the takedown. He was hard to get the control. He found it very hard to get it, but eventually he did. Got into half guard with some good ground and pound. Got into the side control, but he was nearly swept, so he went back to the half guard, into the side control again, landed a few shots, got the crucifix. But the biggest issue here was how good Golsov was off of his back. He just kept sweeping, kept making it hard, didn't allow him to land many shots. But there was at one stage there, towards the latter maybe minute or two of round one, where Lyndon Vassell got the posture and landed some good ground and pound. Then he got into the mount. So that ability to get the posture up, land those shots, opened it up a little bit. Then he got into the mount, as I said. Big shots, but it was like a little bit too late, started to rush it. And then Dennis swept him, and he landed some shots. Dennis went for the guillotine, landed on bottom, and that was the end of the round. Vassell, quite clearly, I think, took that round. Second round then started off, Denis Golsov attacks immediately and lands some shots. Vassell goes down to like kind of half a takedown. Again, it looked like maybe he was hurt to the body. It was a lot of body shots and a lot of left hooks throughout the night, I found, which are probably my two favourite shots, so I'll take it. Golsov went for a guillotine again, which landed him on his back again. But then he got this double overhook sweep where he got on top, and it was absolutely beautiful stuff. That sweep was, got into half guard. Vassell was kind of giving up his back. He got the one knee in on a single, but Dennis kept control, landed some big shots from the right and kind of riding out that position, tired out Vassell, and he got to the cage and he kind of sat with Dennis on top of him, where Dennis landed some heavy ground and pound, and it could have been stopped there. Wasn't stopped. I think that was a 10-8 round, and then the body language looked very bad. He looked like Marcus Rashford running back for a ball at the start of the third round from Vassell. He looked so tired. There was just nothing left in him. There was really just nothing left in him, taken down quick. So tired, took the back. A lot of ground upon, went for a head and arm choke, couldn't get it. Vassell, he crawled to the cage, and like he almost stood up. He did one of those heavyweight stand-ups, but he didn't have the legs to carry him. And too tired, ground and pound, and the ref stopped it then. I think once he got to that position and just couldn't stand, there was just nothing left to do for Vassell at that stage. And Golsov was so tired as well. Like, Golsov was almost too tired to finish him. At one stage, like that a head and arm choke I talked about a minute ago, he was like, ugh, will I go? Nah, I leave him. he kind of just fell out of it. But yeah, that was probably, it was a good fight for the first, you know, 7-8 minutes, but it turned into a very much a heavyweight fight then. But that was the only kind of fight like that on the night, to be honest, and the rest of them were pretty good. But look, Golsov gets the third round finish, gets his 4 points, I believe, and goes through, and we'll see what happens with him next. Then we had the rematch between Liz Carmouche and Juliana Velasquez, and this ended up being a unanimous decision for Liz Carmouche, who'd already knocked out Velasquez, who'd already submitted Velasquez. Now, the knockout was a bit of an odd one, as we know, but you know, the only 3 losses on Velasquez's career, all to Carmouche, all via, you know, different outcomes, which is, must be just a killer, really. And I saw someone on Twitter mentioning that there was kind of an adjustment from, the Duck, as they call him, Ian Park, mentioned it about Carmouche being more offensive to, you know, to stop whatever Velasquez does, whether she's offensive or defensive. I thought Velasquez was way more defensive in this fight and, like, defended a lot better, but there was no offense behind it. There was no time where she got into her own position to take that fight from from Carmouche, and that was very disappointing. So to run through the fight, Liz immediately strikes her way into the clinch, switching clinch positions in. Liz was in charge. Velasquez in charge. Liz was in charge. Velasquez was in charge. Not much landed before Velasquez landed some small knee strikes. There was a knee again by Velasquez and then a knee by Liz. John McCarthy on the commentary gave the round to Liz Carmouche based on that knee. I think all three judges did as well. I would have just leaned to Velasquez, to be honest. I thought she landed knees that were just as good, and I think her shots from the clinch were far and away better than Liz Carmouche's. Now, having said that, I thought, like, 10-10 went through my mind. That's how close this was. Now, you never scored a 10-10, but you know what I mean? I'm like, was there, like, okay, let's do it for the argument's sake, right? Was there a big differential, any differential in the striking and grappling? Not really. I look, a small differential in the striking is where I deciphered around. But let's say no. In the grappling, no. In the effective aggression, no, both of them are kind of equally aggressive, and octagon control, and both of them kind of equally control the octagon. So, you know, I think normally I would say no, never score a 10-10, but like, I wouldn't be too mad at that being a 10-10, but no, I think, look, there was enough in those knees and those shots that Velasquez landed to decipher a winner. I thought it should have been Velasquez, but never mind. It didn't make much of a difference. Second round in, Liz aggressive again. A double leg wasn't successful, but she eventually got the trip and got on top. Not much landed, and she just kind of stood up about 2 minutes later, went back down into half guard, landed a couple more there, but Velasquez didn't do anything in that round, so it was definitely Carmouche round, and it was sealed by a late armbar attempt, which looked to be pretty good. Round three, then there's an immediate clinch. Velasquez kind of controlled it. Liz landed a knee, then Liz got the control, then Velasquez got the control. So there was a lot of this throughout the fight, but then Liz got the takedown. So that was, you know, that was kind of true, especially rounds two and three. Liz getting the kind of big maneuver was the, you know, was the story of this. She didn't pass for ages, but then she got into side control. She got into the mount. The only thing that Velasquez kind of did was got a sweep, went into 50-50, and there was a few leg lock attempts on both of them, but nothing crazy there. And Carmouche won the unanimous decision after that one. Then we have Dakota Dicheva against Lisa Malden. I mispronounced her name in the in all of the preview, but I believe whoever fight I watched of her must have mispronounced it. I blame that commentary, whoever it was. But she looked terrified walking out, did poor old Lisa. And she had a right to be. Dicheva immediately established her range with the kicks, kicking high and low. After two leg kicks, the calf was absolutely reddened. You could tell that Malden just, I don't know if she ever felt him before, you know, or to that level anyway. It felt like she hadn't. But the hands came after it then. There was a bit of a takedown. Like, Malden was doing okay. I thought the commentary maybe gave her a little bit too much credit for the grappling and the takedowns. I think Dicheva was completely in control, to be honest. I think she was happy enough with the fight to go to the ground. But Lisa defended well. She got back up, another clinch. Lisa kind of got a bit of a throw. She was on top for a second, but Dicheva got straight back up. Lovely combination with Dicheva. And then the body shots. Here's the body shots again. They started to hurt her. Malden, you could kind of see, like, she wasn't long for this world after that. There was some ground upon him and she got on top. More shots when they stood up, and I believe it was kind of the left hook to the right hand for Dicheva that was the real finisher, and Malden just collapsed like a controlled explosion went down. And you know, it kind of is a controlled explosion when Dakota Dicheva is fighting. Absolutely brilliant. There was a few people giving out to me on Twitter for it, but she might be the best 125-pound woman in the world. I want to say might now. She's only 11 fights into her career, and she hasn't fought a lot of competition. And certainly Lisa Madlen isn't going to decipher whether you're the best in the world or not. But I'm looking at her skill set. I'm looking at how quickly she throws her shots, how hard she throws her shots. I watched her up close in her last fight, and she was unbelievable. I'm telling you, it's I think with Valentina Shevchenko kind of maybe on her last legs here, what we saw with Firo and Blanchfield the last day, Liz Carmouche is there, all right, but I don't think it's out of the question that Dakota Dicheva would beat any of those people I named right now. Now, maybe not Shevchenko in her pump, but I don't think Shevchenko's in her pump anymore, especially by the time, like, Dicheva, let's say Dicheva goes to the UFC in a couple of years, I don't think Shevchenko will be there then. So I think she's well on her way to becoming the best 125-pounder world, and maybe the best female fighter in the world. I really truly believe she could become that. Now, you know, she'd come out and fight Liz Carmouche in her next fight and lose, but she could still become that, you know. But she has all the talent. Having all the talent doesn't mean you'll get there, but she has all the talent. There's no doubt about that. So a very, very good finish for her. And she got the stoppage there at 3:54 of round one. It was the last second of round one that Daniel James beat Marcelo Gulm in the prelim headliner here. It was a quick takedown for Gulm. James was holding on to the overhook on the ground, but getting battered with left hands as he did it. Got into half guard. James gets the underhook and sits. This was so odd, right? So James got the underhook, and he sat against the cage, and he just started taking huge shots while sitting there with the controlling position. I'm like, what are you doing? Move. But Gorm got into mounting after he did move. James... I used to call Daniel James Bellator Derek Lewis. I have to call him PFL Derek Lewis now. He just bucked out off the mount. Gorm got into half guard, but James reversed it into his own half guard. Attacks with massive ground and pound. Controlled in the back. Huge ground and pound again for James. And Gorm just could not survive. And the fight was stopped with 1 second left in the first round. And a very, very good finish for Daniel James. And you'll see a lot of these fights from Daniel James in his run in PFL over the next while. Then we had another heavyweight fight, and this one was a real good fight. You might think, okay, three rounds of heavyweight action between Belay Ivanov and Sergey Bilishtin. You might think, okay, not great, lads. I'm glad I didn't sit up for that, but you'd be wrong. Really, really, really good fight. Both were throwing bombs to start it off with. Sergey was landing the better, for me, early anyway. Left hand by Ivanov, though, started landing. It was a lovely shot down the middle. Barrage by Billow, as well. I'm going to start calling him Billow. A barrage of uppercuts. Ivanov Din was landing the better. Billow was stepping back, and he got more defensive at that point, which was smart because they both kind of started landing again. So it took him from a place where Ivanov was landing the better to it being even, and Din, when he kind of got tired towards the end of the round, Sergey, it kind of, you know, Ivanov didn't get too much ahead there. Round two, I wrote in my notes that Bilistene decided to become the athlete. And he was just so much faster than Ivanov, landed loads of shots. Ivanov barely survived it, but he did. And then Billow got very tired, very tired. Backs into the clinch. He was landing well to the body, though. And he was landing... It was a smart display from Sergey, I'll tell you what. Because he kept landing counters, and he kept landing kind of dirty little shots when he looked tired, when it looked like Ivanov was kind of winning. And, you know, Ivanov's eye closed up then. There was a bit of blood, and landed to the body very, very well. In the third round, look, they were both very tired. Ivanov was throwing more, but missing more as well. The Sergey jab was lovely. Again, the counters were lovely, and Sergey kind of just picked him off, I thought, in that third round to win it. But a very good fight, a very fun fight. Both of them, you know, they were tired, but they kept going in that third round, and it was by no means a slap fest or anything like that. So really good. If there was one fight you wanted to go back and check out, I'd go for the Dicheva first to watch her, but this would probably be the fight at night for me. Very good fight, very good fight. Then we had Talia Santos against Arya Stark, Alia Joanna, and it was you know, she normally said not today, it was today, unfortunately, for Alia Joanna. What's rest of Talia Santos, we found out. They were both a tad wild early. Santos got on top, head and arm. She went for the straight arm bar. Neither were too close, but into close guard for ages. Good ground and pound for Santos. She adjusted, and she got the rear naked choke. And that was about that. And that fight, it went very quickly. 3:57 of round one. It's just an absolute destruction for Talia Santos there. And she's going to go on. Like, there's her, there's Dicheva, and there's Carmouche in that division now with Kanawana Tabe, who we'll talk about a little bit later on. But very, very fun. Very fun division, that is. The next fight then was Steve Murray against Oleg Popov in the heavyweight division. Tall Steve landed a few early. Oleg clinched him up. But Stolzhev was defending well. And then he just... this was so for sure. I have a bit of a soft spot for tall Steve Mowry. But he just abandoned the over-under position. And he got taken down. I'm like, what are you doing? Got up with too much issue then. But... and he took the back of Oleg, trying to defend. Two hooks in. Body triangle for Mowry. Couldn't get the choke, but moved for ground and pound. Popov got to his knees. Still in the body triangle, though. Mowry cranked. Crank looked close and head face crank. Nah, not close enough, though. Oleg slipped to the top and landed a couple of heavy shots towards the end. In the second round, there was just zero defense from either of them. Both were landing. Oleg landed best with those left hooks again. Steve threw a knee and got taken down, and that was that. The low fight IQ, to throw a knee like that when you're so much taller than your opponent. Side control for Oleg got the crucifix, and it was, as I actually tweeted before Sean O'Connell said it, but it was death by a thousand punches in that crucifix position for Mowry, but for Popov to get the win there at 3:47 of the second round. I mentioned Kana Watanabe earlier on. She got the decision over three rounds against Shanna Young. Young missed weight coming in, so she was never going to get the full points anyway. So they came out trading Watanabe, I always pronounce her name wrong. She clinched and got her back. Only had one hook in, but Young... So she'd one hook in and Young didn't realise it. And she sat there for ages, where she could have just, if she turned, I think, to the right, she would have gone into the half guard and gotten bottom, or maybe would have got to her knees, bucked her off and got out. But there was an early rear naked choke for Kana. Eventually tried to shake her off, did Shanna Young, but it was kind of too late at that stage. It eventually worked, but she got into a Kimura as the round ended, and it was just too little too late. Few shots from bottom to start the round. Kana tripped her, was kind of on bottom, but... quickly got back up and, you know, won that round as well. And then the same sort of thing happened in the third round, and it was nearly a late armbar, but you know, Watanabe was just kind of the better throughout, won it on the ground, won most of it on the feet as well, just a little bit faster. The biggest issue she had here was the size, and I wonder, will that be an issue for her going forward in this division, especially against people like Dicheva, who's big, Talia Santos, who's not small either and used to fighting bigger girls. So I wonder, would that be a slight issue here? Jenna Bishop then got the big win against Chelsea Hackett very quickly again, 4 minutes 15 in the first round by armbar. Got on her back, went for the armbar, got the armbar. That's basically it. She got, but there was a slam. Hackett slammed her, and it just kind of made the submission tighter. And you know, it's interesting. There was a lot of armbar tries, a lot of Kimura tries, and things like that. And I wonder, is that because they can't throw elbows? I wonder if you're fighting off your back, you know. A lot of the defense now off your back is throwing elbows, but now maybe it's encouraging people to use their submissions more and go for more arm bars and more triangles and things like that off their back, which is good. They don't work, but it's good. Now this one, well, she did get the arm bar, I suppose, and that was very good. The biggest shock of the night was for Dimitri Ivy in the featherweight division. This was a showcase fight. He beat Lucas Brennan. Loads of clinching and infighting throughout this fight. Ivy landed the harder shots inside, I thought. Brennan was landing some good kicks. Ivy won, I thought, the first. I thought the second win for Brennan. I thought the third win for Ivy as well. But a very good fight. And Ivy, like, I think I've seen him a couple of times before. Watch him obviously coming into this, and he has impressed me. But Lucas Brennan, you know, back to the drawing board maybe for him after this one. He obviously had a very good start to his career, going 9 fights undefeated, beating Weber Almeida and everything like that. But a big loss for him there. But look, build your way back up, and that's that. And in a very good fight as well, to start it off, Bryce Meredith against Ty Johnson. Ty was kind of the BJJ guy looking for subs, and Bryce was the wrestler. Ball landed on the feet. Bryce fell into the right hand. Most of the times, the most effective punch from Merritt. Bryce's here. So here's what it was. I was just saying words there. It's 5:36 a.m., so bear with me. Bryce Meredith was kind of falling in and throwing his right hand at the same time, and it was a very effective punch. It shouldn't be, but it was a very effective punch. It was the type of punch that a very effective, maybe southpaw hooker counter fighter, Conor McGregor type, would absolutely eat you up with. But it worked for him, and he ended up getting the unanimous decision over Ty Johnson. And yeah, it was a good fight. It was a good fight. So even the fights that went to decision here were all pretty good. Like the only fight I'd really complain about was the which fight was it? Was the Maori? No, yeah, Maori Papa wasn't amazing. Golsov and Vassell. That was the only one I'd really complain about. Anyway, but other than that, very good start to it. We had some good finishes and some, do you know what? Some interesting fights lined up, like Santos, Decheva, and Carmouche. Who of them is going to... Will they be fighting in the next round, or will they try to spare it for the finale of the playoffs? Very interesting. Like Moldavsky, Golsov, James, Bilistene, Popov. All of those. Very interesting what way they're going to line up next and who they're going to fight. Like, you know, again, there's a lot of new matchups there, isn't there, because of the whole Bellator PFL thing. Like Moldavsky versus Golsov, that'd be a fun fight next. Like, I'd even like to see maybe you could do Vassell versus D'Elia, the two losing fighters there. You know, Daniel James, maybe even Daniel James against Ivanov, who lost. I think that'd be a fun fight. So lots of fun fights to make as we go on in the PFL season. All right, everyone, I will leave it there. Thank you very much for tuning in. My name is Sean Sheehan for SureDog.com, and I'll see you all next time.